Greetings, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades. As we speak, arguments are being presented to the Supreme Court of the United States, which might well turn over Roe versus Wade jurisprudence from 1973. The abusive interpretation of the 14th Amendment, which is really, I would say, cooked into the 14th Amendment. Whole other question. We've had the chance to do this before, to overturn Roe, about halfway between its formalization in 73 and now, in 1992, and we squandered that opportunity. I'm going to tell you several things today. One, why that opportunity was squandered. Two, why it might be squandered today, but three, why it might not. Why we might actually rid ourselves of this diabolical evil, far more diabolical than any other evil that has ever festered at the heart of this post-republic, including slavery, you know, the internment of Japanese Americans in World War II, horrible things all, segregation, blah, blah, blah. Abortion's worse than all of them, and we have the unique shot to get rid of them now, today. Where, you know, the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments, and that doesn't mean that we're going to hear from today, but I would point out this case hails from my native Mississippi. My native Mississippi. The case is called Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. It centers around a 2018 Mississippi state law that protects unborn babies by banning abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Now, here's what you need to know, the basics. Just because the Mississippi state law at question, at issue, bans abortions after 15 weeks, which is a big improvement over whatever was considered viability in Roe, I think 22 or 23 weeks. That doesn't mean that the Supreme Court can't, as a matter of their power of hearing cases and controversies, take this issue of abortion and say, yeah, more science has been presented, or any other among a thousand legal theories, and say, we're just going to ban abortion altogether. Or they could strike down this law altogether, which is what they did in the halfway between Roe and now case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey from 1992. Or they could do anything in between. The Supreme Court is the high court in the land, has power over equity and law, and as such, it could go more ambitious than this ambitious Mississippi state law, as ambitious as the recent Texas law, which just passed, the heartbeat law. It could go far less ambitious. It could sell us out, knife in the back. I'm going to talk about why that's a real danger, something we're actually all, those folks who watch the Supreme Court and understand constitutional law, are quite afraid of. It's a real possibility. So it's exciting stuff. I'll just point this out as a preliminary note. People asked me when I moved here a little over a year ago, you know, almost a year and a half ago, from California. Tim, I get you're moving from blue to the red. But why Mississippi? And I said, well, it's real simple. This state is the most conservative on most measures in the 50 United States. It's also the cheapest or second cheapest, and it's one of the ones I consider beautiful. I love forest. I'm a Lord of the Rings nerd, okay? I moved from the desert of California. California has no forest, aside from little pockets, to forests. And Mississippi is the place for me. And from it hails this 2018 quite ambitious anti-abortion, aggressive anti-abortion law from 2018, which protects unborn babies by banning abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. This is beautiful action. It's everything I'm urging at the level of pre-nullification. Nullification was when the state governments say to the Fed, that's great. In Roe versus Wade, you guys said viability is the big test. The age of fetal viability is 22, 23, 24 weeks. We don't really care. Under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, we have this power over health, safety, welfare, morals, not you federal government goons. So we're just going to take it back by making a law. Seek forgiveness or something like it rather than permission. The Supreme Court today hears the arguments as to whether or not that forgiveness, permission, it's all ex post, will be granted. We'll see. It's really exciting. First off, before I get into the analysis, I want to hail this channel and my own personal patrons on Patreon. Go to Timothy J. Gordon if you want to become one. My loyal patrons are among the best people on the internet. God bless you all. Thank you. You enable this kind of content to come out clean, and you enable me to focus on what I do here, writing books, giving commentary, giving talks live. Without you guys, I couldn't do this work. The second most direct way to do that is to purchase my books. The first, the most recent, The Case for Patriarchy, and the namesake book, which I wrote in between these. I co-authored it with my brother, Rules for Retrogrades. Taking Back the Family, Case for Patriarchy, Taking Back the Culture, Rules for Retrogrades, and Taking Back the Country, Catholic Republic. I announced yesterday with my friend and co-author, Dr. Michael Robillard, that I am currently writing a book on taking back the institution of learning called Don't Go to College. Taking stuff back is what Rules for Retrogrades is all about. And yes, it is a uniquely Catholic project, or at least a project that is unique to the Catholic intellectual tradition. So buy these books. This one, the most recent one, The Case for Patriarchy, 2021's most revolutionary book, is on sale, like 25% off if you go to Sophia Press today. You can also get it on Amazon.com. Now, I've already mentioned the fact that I moved to Mississippi, and I did so as both a practical and an ideological thing. You should do the same. Or if you don't move to Mississippi, get somewhere in the blood-red swath of states between Texas and Florida. At least get to a blood-red state, even if you're not in this contiguous band of brothers. Get someplace awesome like Idaho, I guess. But I recommend the blood-red swaths of states to which I moved. Go to realestateforlife.org. This is realistic. I can vouch for it. I had a go plan, and I went. It works well. The folks at realestateforlife.org will make this large headache less large. It's always a hassle. It's always a bit scary to move. But hey, this is the time to do it. It's late 2021, and there's nothing else for it. The coasts of this country are lost. You can't take them back, and you're not fighting anyway. Go to realestateforlife.org and move today. Also, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave a comment. I like cookies is good enough. Let's get into Roe versus Wade. There's another case on point called Doe versus Bolton that people don't actually know about. Today's case is Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, and it's at the Supreme Court under oral argumentation as I speak. Now, the important case between Roe versus Wade is a 1973 case, which is egregious. It's an egregious case from a Supreme Court that has a history of some quite egregious holdings. It's probably the worst ever. It made up a emanation of a penumbra of a right of privacy, which does not exist anywhere in the Constitution or any of the amendments. And allegedly, that right of privacy gives a woman the right to murder her unborn child, which is inarguably a biologically human life. It's inarguably biologically human, and it's life. So there's a made-up right of privacy that was found about within about 10 years of Roe versus Wade, cases that actually stem from, no shocker, Griswold versus Connecticut, a case that said there's a right of privacy to have contraception, a related issue. And then that right of privacy was implemented 8 years later, I think 8 years later, in 73 in Roe versus Wade. It's like making up some sort of placeholder pseudo-right. It's actually not like that. That's precisely what it is. Which will be used 8 years later to do something even more egregious than legalizing and forcing the legalization upon all 50 states of contraception. Something worse even. Abortion. Later in the day of Roe versus Wade, gloss was added to Roe versus Wade. It was a little legal trick they used in a case called Doe. So Roe and Doe were heard on the same day. Argumentation, therefore. Roe says, you know, look, women have this right to abortion because of the age of viability and as it combines with this idea of the right of privacy. But it made it sound as if abortion in the third trimester would not be allowed. Doe versus Bolton, however, which is hardly ever cited, you've probably never heard of it, opened up more permission to abort late-term abortions. That's why they're still really done at the federal level. They are legal. Here's why. Doe said that for late abortions, all that's required is some sort of medical need presented by the mother, and Doe also defined that which falls under medical need can be constituted by psychological needs. So all a woman has to say if she wants a late abortion is, they'll say, well, you know, Roe versus Wade, you're not supposed to be getting this. And then she can say, well, I have a medical need. What's your medical need? My medical need is my psychological state of mind, which dictates that I don't feel fit to raise this kid. And they go, check. You passed Roe and Doe, even though Doe supposedly violates Roe. No, it abrogates it. And so it's false. It's fake. You're being lied to when you hear, not that it matters much, because killing a baby is killing a baby, even right after conception. When you hear folks on center-right outfits talk about the illegality of killing an unborn baby late term, it's just a lie. That is the status, that is the jurisprudence that is current and up to date in America. Now, before I tell you too much about Dobbs, I'm going to tell you about what should have happened about halfway between then and now in 1992 in a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. The reason I'm telling you about Planned Parenthood versus Casey is, one, because you need to understand the history. Abortion should have been unfederalized, defederalized, less than two decades after it was federalized in 1973. It would have been 19 years. It should have gone away. Conservatives thought that we had a 5-4 majority on the bench. Does this sound familiar? This should sound almost like our own day, except some people even are naive enough to believe we have a 6-3 majority on the bench right now. Huh, no way. And it was a much, much anticipated case. Reagan had had two picks, right, to the Supreme Court, one of whom was Sandra Day O'Connor. She was a conservative feminist's choice for the bench. I think from my birth year, 1981. And Sandra Day O'Connor, she should sound familiar, that she is a prototype for one of the justices currently sitting on the bench now, a so-called, a circular square, a conservative feminist justice, justice-ess, on the Supreme Court. Who does this sound like? Not Justice Sotomayor, right? She's a far lefty. Not Justice Kagan, she's a far lefty. But Amy Coney Barrett, right? History repeats itself, I'm afraid. It too often does. Sandra Day O'Connor was a Reagan pick, just as Amy Coney Barrett was a Trump pick. And in 1992, Sandra Day O'Connor knifed conservatives and Reagan in the back. Not that, you know, Reagan was pro-abortion when he was, for most of his life, kind of like Trump. And only, you know, when he became president did he really flip the switch, become anti-abortion. But did he ever? He gave us this feminist choice of Sandra Day O'Connor, right? Who wasn't at home tending a garden, helping a husband, raising children. She was on the Supreme Court like a good feminist, preserving the unholy anti-sacrament of the left. It is the unholy anti-sacrament of the left to prevail upon and murder little babies in the womb by mothers. It is the unholy anti-sacrament, that keeps the American, I'd say the European left wing together. It keeps the sexual mores, which is a kind of ruse which allows the emboldenment of the globalists to do what they do. Keep people having sex with each other outside of marriage. Abortion will take care of, you know, as a kind of last resort birth control method, will take care of any problematic pregnancies which arise. And more than that, that's the pragmatic reason that abortion is so sacred as this anti-sacrament to the left and to centrists. Centrists are evil too. Centrists and leftists love abortion, my friends, parishorphans and retrogrades. Pragmatically, it's because it enables these animals, these pigs, to have sex with each other outside of marriage, right? And it's a last resort birth control method. It allows the street animals to not use their inside voices and their inside behaviors. They get to continue copulating in the streets. This is what our country has become. But more esoterically, it is loved by the elites for satanic reasons, right? The slaughter of the young by the best friend of the young, ostensibly, their mothers, is pleasing to the dark lord below. It's that simple. Now, all of the swines who are just happy that abortion's there is a last resort method. They say, I'm not pro-abortion. I'm just pro-choice. I'm just happy it's there. You know, in case I end up getting my secretary pregnant. This is how people in the center, even the center right, center left, center, all think about abortion. We need murder to be legal in case I need to use it, so it doesn't get in the way of my vicious pleasure. But people on the far left that run the world want it for far more pernicious, more openly diabolical reasons. Now, they're not open insofar as they're not going to tell you, but they want it because they love the murder of the young. Sandra Day O'Connor, a Reaganite, a Reagan pick, was the swing vote that was supposed to have done with this wildly evil, most pernicious institution, anti-sacrament in American life. In 1992, when I was 11 years old, right? A lot of water has passed under that bridge. A lot of blood, the blood of the young, has passed under that bridge between 1992 and now. As a matter of fact, more time has lapsed between 1992, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and now than had elapsed between Roe versus Wade in 1973 and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, 1992. We've more than doubled the age of Roe versus Wade from the time of Planned Parenthood versus Casey. When I was in law school, it was funny, I was there for the exact halfway point. I was still studying the law, disgusted by Roe versus Wade, as I've been since I was old enough to speak and think. And I remember passing, oh, it was 19 years then, and it's been 19 years from then to now. So that was 92 to then was 2011, right? I was in law school in 2011. I remember marking that occasion. This is the exact point at which the life of Roe has doubled. And Planned Parenthood versus Casey is the exact midpoint. So Sandra Day O'Connor, this means a squirrely, cowardly, never fully conservative Republican like Reagan's pick to the Supreme Court, the most important duty under the current constitutional system of a U.S. president is his Supreme Court picks. And let him be judged by those picks. Now, he gave us Rehnquist, right? Rehnquist was a Reaganite. Rehnquist was like a pre-Scalia. He was based. He was excellent. But he also gave us Sandra Day O'Connor. Let him be judged by history on the basis of those picks. That's what I say. And let Trump be judged on the basis of his three picks. And let me tell you, folks, he did not do as well as Reagan. And Reagan didn't do well. He's batting 1-for-2. Horrible, horrible, horrible. It's not a batting average because 500 would be good. It's like a free throw percentage. You ought to be 90%. Trump was 0-for-3, my friends, because Amy Coney Barrett has already stabbed us in the back on vaccine mandates. She stabbed Trump directly in the back in the Pennsylvania-Florida hearing, you know, which might have arguably preserved his presidency. And so has Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Now, those two have traded places and been half decent in other areas, but yeah, but that's good enough to say now. He's 0-3. Barrett, thumbs down. And I told you that all along. I did a show on Barrett, thumbs down. And people, you all were, a lot of you, let's be honest, a lot of you were whining, oh, she's Catholic. Look, man, she's a Catholic. Go home and raise your kids. Do your job. That's the Catholic teaching. Go home and raise your kids. You're not going to convince me. You are Sandra Day O'Connor, part two. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm not making firm, formal predictions here. Barrett has said countervailing things about what she would do if a case like Dobbs, which comes before her as we speak, comes before her. She hedged. She said both things. She said she'd uphold it. She said she would not feel constrained to uphold it. Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Gorsuch was supposed to be a little bit more conservative than crying Kavanaugh. Remember when he was crying like a baby in front of the Senate? I mean, I was supportive of him. He clearly got railroaded, but he was crying like a baby. It makes it hard to support a man that's crying. We're not talking about Rittenhouse. You know, Gorsuch was not on trial for a 60-year sentence, and he wasn't 17 or 18. Kavanaugh. But the point is, Kavanaugh's been a slightly better than I thought he would be. I thought he'd be like a 6. He's like a 6.5. Gorsuch has been slightly worse than I thought he'd be. He's been more like a 6, and I thought he would be a 7. We don't know, but there are really only two conservatives on the bench. There are only two men on the bench that are bona fide Catholic conservatives, originalists, who will serve up the right decision 10 times out of 10. And they are Blessed Justice Thomas, who's always writing about the natural law, who's considered the closest to Scalia. I had two different opportunities to have a dinner with Thomas and during law school, and because of Abby's recent surgery and some PTSD that I was experiencing at the time, I had to pass him up. Because I would have had to get on a plane and jump across the country. I just needed to be with my wife and kid. But I wish now that I'd gone and met this blessed man with a great wife as well. And Justice Alito, Silent Sam, who went to law school with a couple of my professors. And he was called Silent Sam, a bona fide Catholic conservative. These two guys, I guarantee you, parish orphans and retrogrades, will come out right on Dobbs today. As for the three Trump picks, I have no ever-loving clue. If history repeats itself, if past is prologue, as the Bard once wrote, then I don't like our odds. Now, the one difference, the one man that I haven't mentioned, obviously the three lefties, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Breyer, the leftist dinosaur Breyer, the last standing pick from that generation from the left. The one man I haven't mentioned is you guessed it, the head justice, Roberts. If you count, who is also a Republican pick, he was a Bush pick, so anything but conservative. He's been awful. He's awful on Obamacare. Remember, he flipped his mind the night before the Obamacare decision came out. He was waffly on Obergefell, and he's been bad on many decisions since then. I'd say over 50% of the high notoriety cases that have come before, not just the court, but the American public, as big important cases since then. He's been more of a lefty than a righty. Hey, he's a Bush pick. Bushes are evil, evil men. Evil men who marry pro-abortion women, as we found out after the George W. Bush pregnancy. His wife and his daughters are wildly pro-abortion goons, right? They're murderesses in terms of their ideology. And you could tell by a Bush pick, why in the world would you pick
Justice John Roberts. Now, there's speculation about John Roberts being easy to blackmail. People speculate about his name on the lists of the Lolita Express, on the logs. It's a little difficult to ascertain with any precision whether or not this is him because he's got such a common, boring name, right? John Roberts could be anyone. But he does seem easy to blackmail, and the guy folds like an umbrella, assuming that he was ever a conservative to begin with, which is probably assuming too much because he's of the Bushes. And remember, the Bushes hated the Reagan Revolution, and they hate conservatives. So if you go with the standard count of conservatives to liberals, then unlike 1992, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was supposed to be 5-4 conservatives to liberals, with this waffling evil feminist, Sandra Day O'Connor, who flipped and preserved abortion. Yeah, you know, it was her job. That was I guess why she was there. I don't know. I don't think the elites are surprised by this. I think that was orchestrated to appear like a surprise, and I don't think it is. I think all this stuff is relatively preordained. But unlike that, we ostensibly have a 6-3 majority. If you buy anyone outside of course, not Sotomayor, Kagan, or Breyer, but anyone outside of Alito and Thomas as a conservative, I'm talking about Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Roberts, which I don't. But it's supposed to be 6-3, meaning we have one justice better odds than was enjoyed in 1992. Roe versus Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So what's going to happen? I don't know, but I'm very nervous. I'm not optimistic. The only thing that makes me feel good about this is the fact that Dobbs versus Jackson comes from Mississippi. It's also very, it does bode slightly well that the Supreme Court did not preempt the even more ambitiously, aggressively pro-life law coming out of Texas earlier this year. Let me read you this lifenews.com article. Supreme Court has its best chance in decades to overturn Roe versus Wade, protect unborn children. This is a very good article on lifenews.com. Wednesday is a big day at the U.S. Supreme Court when the justices plan to hear a case that could overturn Roe versus Wade and restore legal protections for unborn babies. The case is Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, and it centers around a 2018 Mississippi law that protects unborn babies by banning abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Currently, under Roe and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, states are prohibited from protecting unborn babies from abortion before viability, about 22 weeks of pregnancy. What I like about Life News is they're always consistent about getting the diction right. Roe versus Wade did not legalize abortion. Rather, Roe versus Wade prohibited states from protecting unborn babies from abortion before viability, meaning Roe versus Wade made it illegal for any one of the 50 states to make abortion illegal, to illegalize illegalization of abortion. It was before that a state's issue, and some states had legal abortion. So Roe versus Wade did not legalize it. It enforced legalization of abortion. I'll continue. For the first time in decades, however, the Supreme Court has agreed to reconsider this precedent and decide whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortion are unconstitutional. End quote. Freedom Center managing editor John Wesley Reed said Mississippi case poses a significant threat to Roe, which led to about 63 million unborn babies being killed in abortions. Roe versus Wade, I'll repeat, led to about 63 million unborn babies being killed in abortions. Unfathomable. People talk about slavery, segregation, the internship of Japanese Americans as unspeakable truths, but then they just gloss over abortion. Those are nothing compared to the slaughter of the most innocent of all races, as the gaywads say, all races, actually especially young black Americans, being slaughtered so that these vile street animals can continue to fornicate and adulterate. It should be unspeakable, and we just say abortion, abortion, abortion. You take a little pause before you say slavery, segregation, internment. Writing at the Christian Post, he explained, the Supreme Court has reviewed several cases related to abortion since 1973's Roe decision. But of these cases, only Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992 addressed the Roe precedent. Other cases involving abortion were related to late-term abortions, free speech rights of pro-abortion advocates, and restriction on abortion providers based on ambulatory care or proximities to particular medical services, among other issues. The fact that the U.S. Supreme Court is revisiting viability is entirely implicative that their decision will, in some fashion, directly impact the Roe precedent. In other words, the only court in the land, we have two levels of court, just as we have two levels of legislator or executive, state and federal. Of all the three levels of federal court in the land, there's only one court that sets its own docket, that decides which cases it will grant cert to. The Supreme Court. The fact that they granted cert means they want to inveigh on the standing law, the black letter law that they helped to write in 1973. What do they want to say? Remains to be seen. I'll continue. Another aspect that gives hope to pro-life advocates is the, here it comes, conservative majority on the high court. I always cross myself and cross your fingers besides. Six of the justices are Republican appointees, and three of them were appointed by President Donald Trump, who promised to choose judges who would reconsider the infamous abortion ruling. Now, Steph and I remember very distinctly Trump, right before the 2020 election, giving a rally, I think it was in Florida, where he said, it was right after the murderous intentioned Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. He gave a rally saying, do you want a woman on the Supreme Court? And the idiots, you know, the identitarian identity politics playing idiots at this Republican gathering all screamed their hearts out. Yes, they didn't say, we just want the best justice, right? Give us another Scalia, another Rehnquist. Yeah, no, I specifically don't. I'm not even trying to be sex blind or sex neutral here. But at the very least, they could have said, what kind of question is that? We're not identitarians. We're not just Republicans. Trump was pitching himself for 5 years as a conservative Republican. What the hell are you talking about? Do you want a woman on the Supreme Court? Well, if you give a woman, definitely not a Catholic. I remember some people were saying, oh, this is good. She's a Catholic woman. I think Taylor Marshall was saying that. Well, if she's a Protestant conservative woman, then at least she has an excuse for her ignorance. Protestants don't have the magisterium teaching clearly the role of a wife and a mother. They don't have that. So you can overlook a bit the fact that they get sucked into this honey trap, you know, having a glittering career. But she's a Catholic. That means we can't overlook it. The fact that this is a woman who's neglecting her many children to go and do whatever she's going to do, to render whatever she's going to render today. This is why Trump said he picked these three, and these three already have in a year and a half, two and a half years for Gorsuch, three years for Gorsuch, a bad track record. Right off the bat, they started racking up L's. So this is why I draw a deep breath before I read in this goodlifenews.com article that six of the justices are Republican appointees and three of them were appointed by Donald Trump and that they're part of a quote-unquote conservative majority. I mean, the other things are facts, right? You got six Republican appointees. You can't call them all conservatives. Because the Republican Party is pretty evil. Hence, Sandra Day O'Connor. That's why we're even talking about abortion now. Folks, should have been gone in 1992. We had a Republican majority which rarely equates to a conservative majority. So don't be a sap. If this thing happens, then good for everyone that makes it happen. But this is one prediction I'll make. This ain't going to be a 6-3 decision either way. Mark my words. Boom. That, I don't know which way this is going to turn, but it's not going 6-3, people. It's not going to be 6-3 against the pro-life movement, but it's not going to be 6-3 against the pro-abortion movement. There will be defectors. I don't know how these four rats on the court, Roberts, Barrett, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, I don't know how these four rats decide amongst the four of them which of us are going to knife Caesar in the back today, right? Who's going to be Brutus? Who's going to be Cassius? I don't know. They probably do. They're like, we got to make this look close. It's going to be 5-4 one way or the other. That's my prediction. I don't know which way it's going to be. But when you got four rats on your six-person majority of conservatives and only two legit true blue conservatives, God bless Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, who can be counted on, then no way this thing's going 6-3. Okay? I will come on and I will kiss my dog on camera. Yeah, my little puppy. If this thing goes 6-3, it ain't. It's going to be 5-4 one way or the other. That's the way spineless, heartless, toothless, gutless, private partless conservatives work. Okay, back to the article. Justices Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch could finally deliver the tough blow as the court takes up one of the biggest legal challenges to abortion rights since the 1973 landmark decision, Newsweek predicted. Pro-life advocates hope the Supreme Court will scale back or overturn Roe. No, don't. We hope they will overturn Roe, not scale it back. When they hear the case, many pointing to the conservative majority's recent decision not to block a Texas pro-life law as a promising sign. I agree with that. Doesn't mean tons, but it means something. It doesn't mean nothing either. If they do, states would be allowed to protect unborn babies from abortion again, possibly from the moment of conception, because of what I described to you. The court has this kind of plenary, equitable power to go over and once they deign to hear a case or a controversy, they can go over or under the ambition, the ambitiousness of the state legislation before them or the federal legislation before them. So they could say, yeah, forget 15 weeks. I don't think they're going to do this, right? If you had five Justice Thomases or Alitos or Scalias on the bench, then boom, this thing would be gone. And they'd be like, yeah, all the way to conception. No exception for rape and incest. Just some made up.
There's no exception for rape and incest in the Mississippi law either.
Beautiful. Yeah. Okay. If they do, states would be allowed to protect unborn babies from abortion again. That's a good phrasing. Possibly from the moment of conception or at least after the first trimester. And groups estimate anywhere from a dozen to two dozen states would do so. That's good. That's good that someone's done a kind of roll call on which states would do so, one to two dozen. As a result, thousands of babies would be spared from violent abortion deaths each year across America, murdered by their mothers who hire these medical hitmen to kill them. The abortion industry is very worried. Shannon Brewer, who runs Jackson Women's Health, the only abortion facility in Mississippi, told the Associated Press that the case has her the most worried I've ever been. You know, even if this thing comes to naught and we get Sandra Day O'Connor in the back again, at least we'll have made this this woman nervous. It counts for something. As Fortune noted, in the past, the Supreme Court has denied or ignored other major abortion challenges. In the Mississippi case, signals to advocates that the highest court is willing to reconsider the core principle that abortion should be accessible and legal within the U.S., even if they ultimately decide not to rule on it. Brewer's abortion facility, which is challenging the law, argues that abortion is safe. It's safe. What?
Safe for who?
Yeah, safe for whom? I mean, I don't particularly care about the safety of the murderous mother, right? We talked about this three shows ago. Assumption of the risk. When one becomes a murderer or an arsonist, think what were some of those guys named that Rittenhouse busted a cap in, right? Rosenbaum, right? I'm not worried about his safety, baby. What are you talking about? This is clown world. Abortion is safe? They're like, yeah, for the mother. The hell? I don't care, right? This is someone that has heretofore existed within the bounds of law, become an outlaw to try to murder your baby, and we're worried about the risk assuming, the assumption of the risk bearing party who is attempting to murder or set a building on fire or steal a car. For thousands of years of human history, the civil society, represented by the penumbra of common law and constitutional law, does not worry about the risk-assuming party called the outlaw. That's what an outlaw means. You're outside of the protective warmth of law, the protective walls of the citadel. Right? So don't tell me abortion's safe. It kills the baby safely. It's safe for the baby. This is the party we need to be protecting. And you all know that. I mean, this is all old rhetoric, but it's hard not to repeat. Whew. Abortion is safe, according to Brewer's abortion facility. And overturning Roe would be too political. It would be too political. What does that even mean? There, everything is political. Embrace it. According to the report, it would be too political. It also criticized Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch's argument that, quote, it is now easier for a woman to prevent unwanted pregnancy and to raise a child while working full time, calling it false and paternalistic. There's so many fallacies baked into even the conservative point of view on, you know, it's like an enigma wrapped within a riddle, wrapped within a fallacy, you know? Oh, we shouldn't need a, I mean, she's doing her part to get rid of abortion, so I won't criticize too much. But the basis for the claim is, well, women can still have tons of contraceptive sex and still work their jobs and not need to abort. So obviously it's hard to get too behind that. But I get what she's doing. She's trying to end the murder. Science has made it increasingly clear that unborn babies are unique, living, and valuable human beings. By 15 weeks, unborn babies are nearly fully formed, with beating hearts and detectable brain waves, unique fingerprints, and all the major organs. Duh. I mean, I guess some retards out there need this fact spit at them, or page of facts spit at them. But if you don't know this by now, you're not smart. On ultrasounds, unborn babies at this stage can be seen sucking their thumbs and responding to noises. Americans recognize this too. Polls consistently show that a strong majority of Americans oppose abortions in the second and third trimesters, and many support heartbeat laws that protect unborn babies at the earliest stage of life. Yet the United States is one of only seven countries in the world that allows elective abortion on demand after 20 weeks of pregnancy. But Roe makes it sound like it doesn't. We already talked about that. Most countries, including in Europe, have laws that protect unborn babies from abortion after the first trimester, if not sooner. We already explained how Doe gets around Roe, and it's the same nine people hearing Doe a couple hours after they heard Roe earlier that day. So they did this on purpose, where they can say Roe's the only one everyone knows, basically makes it illegal for mothers to secure abortions after 20, 22 weeks. But then Doe comes along and provides a major carve-out, hollow-out. Supreme Court is scheduled to hear the Mississippi case Wednesday morning. A ruling likely will be published in summer. So this is another way that this high court and these elites that sit on it, two of whom I do admire and respect, insulate their decisions and their own welfare. They hear it now, and they'll publish their decision in about 6 months. So this is not like a verdict you get to sit around and hear read out later in the day or as soon as they render it. We get to wait for 6 months. All the while, babies, even assuming the best, babies will be killed at whatever rate they're killed at now. And of course, the Mississippi laws of record. So there will only be a difference if the Supreme Court is unbelievably more ambitious than the state of Mississippi was in enacting this Dobbs law. Anyway, look, hit your beads hard, say your rosaries. If the United States of America federally takes really ambitious action against abortion, then I could be wrong about this is the end for us, right? I could actually be wrong. God will not hasten the end of the life of America as much as we've given away all of our other rights, which are basically sacred. If we do away with the number one travesty against human life, maybe there's hope for us. Now, that's a big if. Look at the goobers, look at the turncoats we have that we're depending on. What we need in old-fashioned campaign path counting, when you count the path of a candidate that you're rooting for in an election, this is how many states we need to turn. In a general election, we have four gutless turds who are turncoats. Casey, Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Roberts. Roberts is the worst of them all. Roberts is probably automatically. I don't know the logic of how this works. How they start trading horses behind the scenes. But Roberts, you gotta figure, is just, he's already with the libs. I think he's with Kagan, Sotomayor, Breyer. So, you know, if not, then you need three out of those four. And any one of these gutless turds will stab us in the back, and any two of them likely could do it. You know? Just cowards. Gutless, principleless cowards. We need three of four or four of four. Yeah, right. That's what I told you. I'll kiss my puppy on the camera if we get four of four. And I'll be glad to do it. One, because he's a nice puppy, but two, because it'll mean we get rid of abortion, more importantly. But no, you know, I'm saying no way we get four out of those four. We need to turn three out of four. And when the spineless knaves at count are crying Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, who's stabbed us in the back a couple times, not as many of the others. Amy, stay-at-home mom, Coney Barrett, and John Roberts, maybe not, on the flight log on the Lolita Express to Epstein Island. When these are your rogues gallery of losers we're depending on, getting three out of four is no small feat. Okay, that's all I'm saying. We need to turn three of those four. Why would I say this publicly? I'm talking to, you know, several thousand people. There is no way that Thomas or Alito stab us in the back. They won't do it. They're heroes. They're intellectual heroes and they're moral heroes because these guys stick to their guns. But of those other four, turning three out of four feels like it'll take a miracle, even though you're like, well, they're all part of the six-man conservative majority, right? No. They're all the six-person panel of Republican appointees. Getting more than two is a miracle by itself. Getting five, let's pray for it. Let's hit our beads and let's pray for it. Let's pray for the fastening, the chastening of the cowardly. And we can do it. We can do it. I'm not trying to be too negative. God bless America. God bless you guys. And, yeah, were there any questions?
I was just wondering if you wanted to read some of those tweets or no.
Yeah, this is an important show, so let me read some of the tweets you, uh-huh.
Apparently the arguments just closed.
Yeah, so up to date, arguments just closed. Christine Niles tweeted out, Justice Thomas highlights schizophrenic American law that allows states to punish death a pre-viable child as homicide in criminal law, while allowing mother to kill child in constitutional law. Rickleman and Prilligar have a hard time squaring the circle. Very good tweet, Christine. What she's referring to is a lot of people remember the Peterson case in California, where a man, a heinous loser of an evil man, killed his wife, Peterson, and she was pregnant at the time. He was legally charged, and I think this survived appeal. He was legally charged with double murder, two counts of murder. How in the Dickens does this work? Right? At law, from the highest law of the land down, the Supreme Court, that is not a baby. The legal fiction has been pressed upon us that that is not a baby. How is that not a single murder? That fact pattern has been repeated in other cases since then. Christine Niles also tweets out, Justice Kavanaugh lists major cases that have overruled precedent. That, I'd like some context for that. He lists Brown versus Board of Ed, a popular overturn, right? Baker versus Carr, another popular overturn. West Coast Hotel, an important overturn. I'm not going to go through all these. Miranda, another important overturn. Lawrence versus Texas, a heinous but unpopular overturn, right? Saying that sodomies are right. Map versus Ohio, a very popular overturn. One of the most important cases that early con law 1Ls in law school will study. Gideon, forgetting what Gideon was. And then Obergefell, a very popular overturn, making gay marriage a thing, a horribly popular overturn. If court had simply stuck to precedent then, the country would be a much different place, Kavanaugh tweets out, or Kavanaugh says, Christine Niles tweets it out. Good tweets, Christine. Very nice. I'm going to retweet those. Okay. So, you also sent me list of the nine justices and their ages. Clarence Thomas is 73. Breyer is 83. He's a dinosaur. The guy's older than dirt. John Roberts is 66. I'm surprised he's that young still. Alito, 71. Sotomayor, 67. Kagan is 61. The ravishing woman, right, at 61. Gorsuch is 54. I did not know he was that young. Kavanaugh is 56. Crying Cav. And Barrett is 49. Christine Niles, another great tweet. Sotomayor dismissing scientific evidence that previability unborn feel pain, calling it small fringe of doctors who believe that babies feel pain. Contrary to her opinion, this is not the opinion of a fringe group. This is just science. Get with the science, Sotomayor. Also, Laura Ingraham tweeted that Kavanaugh spoke briefly, clarifying that the court is not being asked to outlaw abortion nationwide. How's that? That's bad. So Kavanaugh spoke briefly. I don't have any context for this. I just read the Laura Ingraham tweet. He spoke briefly, clarifying that the court is not being asked to outlaw abortion nationwide. Well, that's not quite right. Under a power of the Supreme Court as the highest court in the land, called the power of cases and controversies, as the Brits say, their black letter law is usually the governing law of the land. Now, they can do something that they call, when they're especially cowardly, they can do something they call restricting a case to its facts or constraining a case to its facts. That means they're like, hey, we'll let this Mississippi law stand in this case only, or in this state only. That would be a gutless, and I was not predicting that. Very disappointing. But hey, you can't disappoint me, because I know all I'm willing to stand by is Alito and Thomas, the true blue, you know, team Catholic. They're all for getting rid of it, right? As originalists. A good originalist is like, abortion's a joke. Stephen White, this was liked by Dr. J. Richards, tweeted that to claim the right of abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia, and to recognize that right in law means to attribute to human freedom a perverse and evil significance that of an absolute power over others and against others. This is the death of true freedom. It's a quote from Evangelium Vitae. Yeah. Oh, you sent me the Ingram tweet a while ago. And Mississippi's Solicitor General, sorry, I've got reproduction on the brain. The Mississippi Solicitor General, Scott Stewart, says there is no right to abortion in the Constitution. Light of News tweeted that out. And then there is a breakfast with Santa in my neighborhood clubhouse. That's something else you sent me. I guess not related to abortion, I'm hoping, unless Santa's gone rogue. Okay, so this show has gone too long, clearly. Say your beads. Pray to end abortion, to end the worst egregious fault that America has on its conscience. God wills it. Deus vult. This means the very survival of America.